Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast with me, Scott Casson-René, and
Al Coates.
I was going to put Lord Al Coates
there. Oh, don't start, honestly. I'm slightly terrified anyway.
Yeah, so we've not numbered this one because it is a special for the conference that happened yesterday at Open Nest in New York, which essentially you went along and you did a few mini interviews, didn't you, Mr. Coates?
Yes, I'll be honest with you. I was slightly anxious, if I'll be totally honest, because I thought I sort of knew who was going, and some people I've had full and frank exchanges with on Tinternet, and I was slightly concerned that those full and frank exchanges on Tinternet may turn into full and frank exchanges over coffee. But it was all okay. It was okay.
Yeah. And you took Lady C with you. She was your body, wasn't she?
Well, I took more than that. I took the good Lady C, and I also took Elaine Amy, who is she's not a woman to be messed with. Let's put it that way.
No, she's not, is she?
No.
Yeah. Oh, bless her.
My dog's cower when she comes in the house.
Yeah. So did I.
That's fair enough.
I always remember the first time as well, because she was doing that 9 months no alcohol, didn't she, for FASD.
Highly commendable.
Yeah, that was the first time I met her. God, I don't know how she did 9 months, but anyway, she did. And even sober, she was Jack Russell. Yeah. So you spoke to a number of... actually, it was quite interesting, because I listened to it earlier, the recordings that you sent me, and it was quite a nice, varied... number of voices, if that makes sense, I was just really interesting. Actually, I know they were quite short interviews, so you didn't get really to the, some were longer than others, but I just thought they were really interesting.
So should we just put it on and maybe have a little roundup? Because I think that I would have loved to speak to Amanda Bowman, and I begged her on several occasions, but she just point blank refused, and that. In the nicest possible terms, she said, "That's just not going to happen. I'm just not talking." And I think that doesn't reflect that she had anything controversial to say, and it doesn't reflect because we've got quite a very warm relationship. But she's just not her jam. She's not a public figure. She doesn't want to be. So that's cool. Yeah. So I'm going to press the start button on our C90 cassette player because I went off with my little C90. Here we go. Speaking to Cat Peace from Patches, which you can find on Facebook, can't you? And we're at the Open Nest conference. So can you tell me why you're here and what you're doing?
Hello, I'm here at the Open Nest conference at the lovely Principal York Hotel on the expert panel of adoptees. I'm here because I was invited, which is lovely, to come and be involved. I think because the past 7 years I've been quite open in advocating for young people from an attachment and adoptive perspective, I was asked to come. And we'll just be trying to communicate, I think, my own experiences and maybe some thoughts around older adoptees. I was adopted at 7 years old, and trying to educate and create some conversations, maybe answer some questions.
Are you giving a presentation?
Not necessarily a presentation, I think, but they'll have the Open Ideas Cafe where adoptees will move around the room and speak with different groups of professionals, parents, that sort of thing. And I do believe there'll be like a Q&A where some questions might be asked and the adoptees will sort of answer amongst the panel.
I know that you're quite open about your own experience and you're kind of comfortable with that. But is it a challenge sort of speaking to large groups of people about your own personal experience?
It's an interesting one. It's not something I've done too much of. Obviously, the internet's quite handy because you can reach a large audience without too much effort.
Or meeting them.
So this is a different ballgame. I think now, because I'm 30, and I've been doing it for about 7 years, and every time I come to these, I learn a lot, as well as hoping to give some information. So it's a really collaborative experience. It's something that I gain a lot from as well. And just playing it by ear, really. It's something I'd maybe like to see more of. And, having open conversations is really important to sort of break down stigmas and just make it a more ordinary thing, really.
What would you like people to sort of take away from what you are going to present? And just that experience of talking to adults who've been adopted?
I think one thing that I tend to find is I often describe it as being like a different language. And if you can break it down, experiences, feelings and opinions, into something that people haven't experienced on that journey, and just give them a slightly different way of looking at things and tools to empower themselves, just a different set of eyes, really, that they can go away and understand, I think, sometimes some of the behaviours or things that present that might not make sense to them, and just be able to bridge some barriers, really.
Well, that sounds really positive. Well, I hope it goes really well, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what people have to say and yourself. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have now finally tracked down Claire, otherwise known as How to Be Adopted, who for years I've been trying to get you to speak on my podcast, but today I finally literally tracked you down. So hello, Claire.
Hello, Al.
I'm really interested because recently you kind of shifted, and I think your opinion's quite well respected. I don't want to blow smoke up your backside, but your opinion's quite well respected on Twitter because you say what you think. But then you've made the shift from How to Be Adopted to Claire. So what inspired you sort of coming out, is that the right
Yeah, I think that possibly could be the right word. I think I felt quite frightened about acceptance from my family when I told them I was going to be in a national magazine, and that I had a secret blog that had been going for 2 years. I went kind of via my brother, who kind of sussed out the lay of the land for me and gave me a double thumbs up. He said, yep, go for it, full name, photo, just do it, it's time. So that was really helpful that I got his kind of thumbs up. And I just thought, you know, there's people out there who have got, you know, much more reason to be frightened than me. So, you know, they're speaking out, they're using their full names and their photos just to try and get their voices out there and get the narrative changed, which is what we all want to do. So if that helps, then I'm going to do it.
Cool. So today we're at the Open Nest, and I know you're on a table and you've obviously been talking to a lot of people. So why have you come? I mean, it sounds like a daft question, but why did you come up from the deep south to the wilds of Yorkshire?
Well, I've just always loved the Open Nest, and they were kind of what inspired me to start my blog 2 years ago. I was just really almost amazed to find out that there was a charity out there who kind of respected the kind of viewpoints of birth families and adoptees, and I hadn't really heard of anyone else out there doing that. And the fact that they're an independent charity is great, because it means they don't they're not in anyone's pockets, and they can kind of really push for policy change and change to the cultural narrative, which I think is really important. Mm-hmm. And I just want to be involved in anything that they do, really.
So how did you find today? It's all over now, and there's lots of different voices from varying perspectives. What are you going to take away from today?
I think it was really important that we heard from the birth and first parents, because they're not heard of outside of these kind of spheres, and it would be good to get them out more into the mainstream narrative. Always good to hear from other adoptees, and this year there was quite a broad range in terms of age and kind of background and level of contact, and what kind of relationships they've got with biological family. So I think that's really important. And just thinking about what would adoption look like if we kind of screwed up the piece of paper and started again. It's really inspiring.
So that is a really, that's the big question. What if we pull it down, what do we put in its place? And so do you have any thoughts on that? Or that's maybe a not fair question, but I'll ask anyway.
Well, I think, you know, as some people were saying today, you know, in some scenarios it is required, but in many it's not. So yeah, just more of a focus on family preservation and, you know, listening to what the effects of adoption are, rather than just seeing it as a kind of cure or a solution without, you know, actually looking at it holistically. Mm-hmm. And the only way I think we're going to do that is if we do hear more of the voices and the experiences of people who have actually been through these experiences.
And so is there anything, we were chatting beforehand and you were sort of mentioning about, you were talking about support and you talk about specific elements of support. So you I know that you're involved in different groups and you do lots of work. So adoptee support, what do you think?
So the group that I help run in London, we have some younger adoptees, but it's predominantly older adoptees from the closed era. And we all feel very strongly that there isn't enough support. In fact, I think there's only a handful of places that people can go, and often you might have to pay at the point of service for those treatments. So I think that we need, adult adoptees need more support, both in the form of one-to-one therapy, if they, you know, if people think that would be useful, and also being able to meet up with other adoptees and share experiences, because there's only I think maybe two groups currently in the UK, and a lot of people turning to Twitter to connect, and that can be a good and a bad thing, as we both experience. I just think there isn't even, I mean, it goes right to there isn't even a recognised, the need for support isn't recognised. So that would be the first step before you can even look at things like funding mm-hmm. for the support. Yeah. It's just quite sad. You know, there's a lot of people I think would benefit. They've had, you know, you have issues with relationships throughout your life. You have issues with big life events like having children, getting married, you know, and I think other than PAC UK, I don't know of any other support there is for adult adoptees.
It is very thought-provoking, isn't it, in relation to the long-term care of children who then turn into young adults, mid-adults, old people. So part of that picture is that you put yourself in the national newspaper, National Magazine. So what's been the response, not necessarily from your family, but from generally, what have you had positive responses?
Yes, I've had about half a dozen people contact me to say thank you for speaking out, and that's a very similar experience to what I went through. And it's just really, you know, some people never spoken about being adopted and they didn't know why they struggled when they had a family, you know, had a baby. So that's been you know, really nice for me to hear that it was worth speaking out. And I think when I started my blog, I said to my husband, if I just help one person, then it's a good thing. And each time I get a message, he says, that's another one person. it's really nice to hear. And it's nice for me, not just to feel like I'm doing something, but it's nice for me in return to feel that I'm also not alone in my experiences. So it normalizes that.
So yeah, the best of social media is that it connects, isn't it? And so less of the, we'll not talk about the other stuff, but thank you so much for talking to me, and I will get you on to tell your story, if that's okay. Is that okay?
Yes.
And that's not fair, is it, on me? You'll just disappear again. Well, thank you very much, and enjoy your journey home. This morning we had a lot of presentations, but one of them was really moving, and it was a spoken word performance by Kirsty Taylor, who I'm speaking to now. So Kirsty, could you just tell me how you got involved with the work you were doing, and if possible, do one of the spoken word performances, please?
Yeah, so I'm a writer and performer, and I work with vulnerable young people and adults all over the country. And I came into contact with Amanda, and as everybody does, feels a real connection and feels what they're doing is really powerful and worth a lot of time. So they managed to get me involved in the project, working with birth parents, looking at writing. I feel like there's so much value in writing as a process, but also looking at how these people can get their voice across, especially when they're not often listened to and their story's not heard. And I feel like there's something, yeah, just really powerful in working with birth parents and representing them in events like this and in other events.
I mean, that's really interesting that one of the issues is always the, when we don't hear these voices, do we? We don't know where to access them, and those people don't know how to share their voices, their quiet voices. We have to listen harder, don't we?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I've worked in the care system for a lot of years. I still work with looked after children. And even spending a day with these birth parents has just massively changed and just taught me so much. And, you know, you think that you're coming from a kind of well-rounded human rights perspective, but you need to listen to these people's experiences to actually let that influence your practice as well. I think we all need to listen to them.
Thank you, that's wonderful. Could you read out what you read in the main conference?
Yeah, so these are the words of some of the parents that we collaborated with, and it's called "I Hate That." If we convert our hate to hurt, will it help us be heard? Because we still feel the pain we bleed in all of these words. It hurts that they judge me before giving me a chance. It hurts that they set me up to fail. It hurts that they don't listen. It hurts that I went on 12 parenting courses. It hurts that some get pictures and some don't. It hurts that pictures of my children don't belong to me. It hurts that the pictures are locked away in a cabinet. It hurts that I did all the things they told me to do. It hurts that they liked him more than me. It hurts that they tried to make me have handprints of my child removed from my skin. It hurts that they treated me like a child. It hurts that they don't look me in the eye. It hurts that they judge me on my childhood in care. It hurts that my son can't see his sisters. It hurts that I didn't get to meet them. It hurts that they told me they had no concerns. It hurts that they judged me on my learning disability instead of helping me. It hurts that I was punished for being a victim. It hurts that they made false promises, broken promises. It hurts that they had unrealistic expectations of me. It hurts. It still hurts.
Thank you, that's amazing.
Cheers.
Cheers. I'm speaking to Sarah Phillimore, who's a family lawyer and a campaigner for all kinds of things. And if you've ever been on Twitter, you'll have seen Sarah having some, how shall we say, full and frank discussions. Is that a fair way of describing it?
A very diplomatic way of describing it.
So you were asked to give a really brief presentation, which all the presentations have been brief, in relation to, well, I'll let you share. What were you asked to speak on?
Well, Amanda asked me just to give a quick précis of what human rights law mean in the adoption field. So I thought, yeah, that'll be dead easy. I'll just do a quick skip through Article 8. And Amanda said, oh, well, in my notes, I've looked at something a bit different. So I said, oh, let's have a look then. And it was a real eye-opener, because Amanda had looked at Article 1 of the first protocol, which is the right to property. Now, that had never even occurred to me to think about or be relevant in this field. And it shows the value of these kind of events, because Amanda was looking at it from a different perspective, about the casual disregard, disrespect for children in care and their personal possessions. They are often, things are lost, things are not treasured, things are not retained. So I thought, how interesting. And it was an eye-opener, because I'm a lawyer and I should be thinking with my lawyer's hat on. And I wasn't, I was being lazy. I was just going down, oh, Article 8, right to family life, blah, blah. So that was really interesting. Amanda also had written some notes on Article 14 about non-discrimination. And again, that's something I just kind of skated over. But of course, it's massive, isn't it, in this field, because we are seeing with the various research that austerity, poverty, class are playing a big role in the likelihood of you being investigated, referred, or have your child taken away. So discrimination is clearly operating. So it was a real eye-opener. I'd like to turn it into a more detailed blog post. It's about the importance of perspective, the importance of coming together at these kind of events. I think I was naive about 5 years ago, and I did think all it took would be for us to get around a table and all have a chat and everything would be great. And I know that's not true, and I know that was naive, but I still think we've got our own sphere of influence, and we can and should do what we can within that sphere and just recalibrate our expectations. I think I had very high hopes of what talking could achieve, and I had to reassess the reality of that. But I'm really pleased I came today, and I think it was, for me as a lawyer, an eye-opener to see how Amanda, what did Amanda think was important about the law?
Because you mentioned there sort of reassessing the Human Rights Act across it, but what were you looking to sort of communicate today?
Well, that was the weird thing. Amanda only asked me last night, would you like to do a little speech? I said, oh yeah, sure. That's so immediately, lazy brain just flicks on. I'll just chat a bit about Article 8 of the European Convention and sit down. But when she showed me her notes, I thought this is worthy of much more thought, because I think it is a black hole of knowledge for so many people. That was a really powerful audio clip of the mother in court not understanding what was meant by all the acronyms and wanting it to be explained, and the court shouting her down. And that's what I finished my talk with. The law should be a framework for protecting us and making our lives better. It should not be used as a tool of oppression, which I've got a horrible feeling it mostly is in adoption law now. But the big problem, I don't think, is that people are malicious. It's that they don't know. It's what you don't know, that will get you every time. And if I, as a lawyer, don't have the requisite wide sweep of the European Convention, how can I shout at a social worker for not knowing? How can I berate a parent for being uneducated about it? So that is maybe for me to recalibrate my efforts now as a lawyer, to think a bit more deeply myself and to try and get that message out by way of blogs and tweeting and whatever. I think it's, social media can be appalling and hurtful and hateful, but it has also meant that I'm here today, and I wouldn't be talking to you without social media. How would we ever have met unless it was, you know, accidentally at some conference? But social media now gives us the opportunity to have these conversations and carry these conversations on. So I still, at some level, have to believe that we want to do this.
I agree with you. I think there's good and bad in the social media. You raised, it was a very brief passing comment, and you talked about the pendulum swinging, because today the voices have been predominantly of a, they've have been a very similar voice, which is we need to assess families better, we need to support families better, which has probably been the universal message. But you kind of very briefly and maybe a little bit controversially talked about the pendulum swinging, and what were you saying?
It goes back to my broader point that people don't want to come out of their silos. It does worry me, and I think we saw evidence of here today, of individual, I won't say pressure groups, that's too pejorative, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Groups of people who come at the problem from a particular angle. And I could see that for the majority of the groups, that angle was the maltreatment, the unfairness to the parents. Now, yes, that is vital, that is crucial. But I have to say, the majority of my cases, I'm not jumping up and down going, why are these children being removed? I'm saying, what the bloody hell went on here? Why am I seeing a chronology stretching out 4 years with case closed, case reopened, case closed? Now, you could say, well, it was lack of support. But come on, I've met a lot of parents, and support is not the issue. There's just a lack of a will and understanding. Some parents are really nasty pieces of work, and that's also has to be,
that,
we also have to keep that in mind. And some parents are frightened and hurting and lost and afraid. And the problem is, social workers have had to become very risk averse, services are cut, so most parents then get jumbled up into that nasty piece of work basket, which of course is hugely unfair and gross and horrible. But what I meant about the pendulum swinging is, if we lose sight of the fact that some children just need to be removed as quickly as possible, and I'm talking about families of intergenerational sexual abuse, for example, I don't think sending a family support worker around to help with washing up touches the sides in those kind of cases. So again, it's about just being willing to speak the uncomfortable truths. And I do worry that some people get so invested in their particular campaigning narrative that they can't even allow another narrative to creep in case it means they have to lose grip on the one they've got. And I don't think you have to at all. You just, as I've said, have to recalibrate.
Yeah.
I am quite sure the vast majority of parents in care proceedings are lost and frightened and afraid, and they do need and deserve support. But if we then shut our eyes to that small group of parents who are just actively dangerous, well, we'll see the pendulum will swing back the other way, won't it? We'll have another baby pee, we'll have another call for social workers' heads on a plate, and we'll have another dead child. And so the pendulum, and this is what we do as a species, which is frustrating. We can't hold a middle ground. It's either parents are all victims, or parents are monsters, social workers are rescuers, or social workers are evil Nazis. And I think social media hasn't helped that dichotomy. It's stripped a lot of nuance out of thinking. So yeah, I felt a bit nervous about saying that, but I thought I've got to say it, because there are sure people in that room who see themselves as victims, and they're not. They're actually perpetrators of abuse, and they are being scaffolded and supported by people with the best motives in the world. It's about, I think, polite, curious skepticism and just trying to stop the pendulum veering. Try and let's hold that middle ground.
Yeah,
because none of us are 100% demon, 100% saint. We're all flawed. We all need help. That's the central point I wanted to make. Human rights law is about a framework to respect the essential humanity of people, because otherwise what happens? You end up with little children being rounded up with yellow stars on their jackets and murdered because they are Untermensch. That's where we seem to go as a species if we don't take a grip on ourselves. And I'm not saying, I mean, I know there are a lot of people who comment online and say, well, that's exactly what's happening now. It's just like the Nazis. And I'm like, oh, for God's sake. That infuriates me. I mean, but I kind of see where they're coming from, because it's a step down that dangerous road. We're not putting parents in gulags and concentration camps and killing them, but the lack of concern for some fundamental human rights is a step down the road that leads to the gulag, is my fear. And we have to be very, very careful how far we go down that road. Because again, I go back to the point, this was in living memory from a civilized European democracy that had Wagner and poetry and opera, and still thought it was okay to call people Untermensch and kill them. And there's a nasty whiff of that when you hear people like Michael Gove talking about rescuing children from these substandard parents. There's just a whiff of that in the air. Yeah. And I think we need to be careful and we need to be worried. But at the same time, we've got to hold in mind that some people are just nasty pieces of work and they need their children taken away. And we need to do it quickly, efficiently, and not be cruel.
Yeah.
But so I do worry about the pendulum swinging. So I hope that's a better explanation of what I was trying to say.
No, that's a great explanation. And I think, as always, you give so much food for thought, and have to reassess as an individual. I have to reassess where I calibrate myself, and it's probably healthy to recalibrate yourself every year, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sarah, I'm not going to take up too much of your time because you've got other people to tell all this exciting stuff to and another group to join. So thank you very much for coming up.
Oh, no. Well, thank you very much for asking me. It's been a delight.
Well, I definitely will get you back. And I'd love to do a full podcast about adoption law and policy and kind of unpack the whole where we're at and how we got here sort of thing. Would that be okay?
Oh, I think that would be really interesting, she says modestly. No, I think it's a very interesting story about what's happened, because there was, some speakers today have commented on it, there was a definite push, I think, back in 2016.
Yeah.
And it was a really ham-fisted, cloth-eared push as well. And I'd really like to know more about who exactly was behind that. But it was, you know, about adoption as the gold standard. And there's been, thankfully, a bit of rowing away from that, but it did a lot of damage. So I think it would be really interesting to tell the story of that, how that came to be, and then how do we recalibrate, which I think is absolutely necessary.
So it's all about calibration.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Sarah.
Oh, thank you.
So I have managed to collar Fran Proctor, who is a trustee of the Open Nest, and I've literally traced you around the building because you're shy, aren't you? Well, no, not shy, but anyway. So hello, Fran.
Hello.
I just had a few questions really about, could you tell us briefly who the Open Nest are?
So the Open Nest are a small group of people who provide support for people within the context of adoption. And that can be in lots of different ways. It can be giving people voices, it can be collaborating, it can be giving people safe spaces to do some of the work they wish to, lots of different ways.
Well, that's exactly what you are. So today, can you tell us what today was about and why you put it on?
Today was just part of our journey, because obviously, as already mentioned, we started doing conferences quite a few years ago, originally just started with, you know, adopted parents and adopted people. And as the years have gone on, we've realised that actually there's a lot of different people involved in adoption and affected by adoption. So we wanted to make sure that we could give different people voices, we could hold space for different people as well, and also, you know, equally listen to different narratives other than our own.
So today there was a specific focus.
Preservation versus severance.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the theme. Hmm. And how do we, human rights in adoption policy was today's theme.
And so we're actually talking at the end. I should have talked to you at the beginning, but you were too busy. So how do you think the day went?
I think the day has gone very well. No, I do. I think that everyone was very engaged. There was a lot of listening. There was a lot of talking. You found, if you watched the room, that people were quite happy to, you know, get up and go and speak to someone across from the room, which suggests that it was a good atmosphere, and that it was also a safe space. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had lots of different people coming up to me, and that's really nice from, yeah, all walks, aspects of adoption.
And so as you go away and you kind of head on home, what are there any takeaway points for you that kind of go, I'm glad that happened, or I'm glad that was said, or is there any takeaway points, or is it just the whole thing?
The whole thing, but I guess just to go over the fact that obviously some things are more complex than we you know, we'd like to believe. However, I think obviously just listening, like I said before, to different people and thinking how adoption affects them and wondering, you know, what can we do to support someone else's narrative as well as our own.
Because at the end there was an expert panel and it was full of people who've been adopted, and they reflected a really broad range of people, so there was every story was unique and sort of sat in a different box, adoption box, if that's a horrible way of saying it. And I think that the complexity was one of the key things that came out at the end, wasn't it? That the idea that, I think it was Professor Bridget Featherstone said, you know, adoption is right in some cases, but we're using it too widely. And I think do you feel as an individual, I'm getting into you as an individual, because sometimes I hear you with a slightly different perspective on that, on whether we should or shouldn't have adoption. So where do you kind of stand on that?
So personally, obviously adoption was the right thing for me. However, as soon as you say that, it feels like people then don't want to ask questions as to how actually your life experience has been. It's very, well, adoption was okay, so that means the rest of your life has been okay. And actually a lot of my life has been incredibly challenging and as difficult as any other adoptee with a different experience. Mm-hmm. So even if adoption is the right thing, it still comes back down to how do you support the fact that it is the right thing and the complexities within that. But also, you know, fully appreciating that adoption isn't the right thing for other families.
Yeah, I mean, that sums it up. So Fran, thank you so much. And you have promised to come on and do an adoptee story, haven't you?
I have, yes.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
So there you go. That, I mean, what did you think of that? I mean, it was nice to hear from all of the people. Kat, who's a friend of the show, and I really was desperate to get the Kirsty to do the spoken word.
That was really interesting, actually.
Yeah, and that was good because there was a few people off Twitter, and there was birth parents there, and they were the first parents, and they'd kind of said, this is ours, but we don't feel, yeah, we want Kirsty to do it. So
yeah,
it was really good. Yeah,
it was. And the thing is, you know when your brain kind of works in a certain way,
mm-hmm.
and my brain over the last few weeks has kind of become undiluted with various different things. So my thoughts have turned to kind of these more obvious things. Now, it might be just the way my brain works. It's all black and white, but actually, I guess where it comes to journeys and adoption, and you know, when I think back to 14 years ago, that sort of thing, probably I was listening to it in the car, and I was sitting there thinking, if they'd given this to us 15 years ago, would we have had a better understanding of what a first parent or a birth parent goes through? And I came to the conclusion the answer was probably no, I wouldn't have done.
Oh, that's interesting. Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, I'm making that assumption based on
who you were.
Where we were. Yeah, exactly. Because we weren't, you know, we definitely weren't the people we are. It's that simple. So, but it just strikes me that there's so many different sides to this. So we've talked about this before, and it's been pointed out on Twitter as well. Adoptive parents tend to have the kind of the voice that's listened to. And we're the ones that are invited around the table and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm just getting more and more frustrated to see that adoptees don't feel they're being listened to, birth parents don't feel that they're being supported enough. Well, actually, there was a key point there, and I can't remember who, was it Sarah that said it?
Probably.
Yeah, it's not about the support, it's actually about people caring. So social workers and practitioners actually bothering to work with the ones that would like the opportunity to work with them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, those that were able to access that. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just getting so bloody frustrating. I just feel so frustrated by it all because I'm just listening. And I think, like I say, my brain is kind of more less diluted than it was. So it's probably very black and white. But, you know, if we've got the opportunity to sit around the table, which we have, you know, you did it this week.
As adoptive parents.
Yeah. I'm doing it next week at something else. What, where are the opportunities for these parents in a position where they can talk to social work people or even, you know, the education the DfE. I keep thinking my brain keeps on flicking to Twitter handles.
You've totally
when I'm saying
decompressed, haven't you? You've totally sort of you've just left
it
all behind.
No.
You left the office
totally.
And left it all behind.
My brain is mush. I'm just getting very frustrated by it. And of course we are in National Adoption Week. And I don't like it. I stopped commenting on National Adoption Week a few years ago because I just thought, do you know what? Nobody is ever going to agree with the narrative that adoption is a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that came from other adopters, that came from adoptees, that came from births and stuff like that. So I just stopped commenting on it, which is probably not the right thing to do, actually, because we do need to talk about it. And but it's just, you know, we talked about it on the last podcast. It's the message that's been brought out that adoption is this, it's that, and it's the next thing, and it's, you know, but it's not. And I guess that's what I'm becoming frustrated with at the moment, is just the fact that nobody really is kind of listening to the other sides of this adoption. Because they used to call it adoption triad, didn't they? But actually, it's more than that. Because, you know, we know we've got siblings who maybe are affected by adoption, not necessarily adopted, mm-hmm. maybe with birth parents still, or with extended family, or SGOs, or, you know, whatever. So there's kind of more than just three sides to this. And we need to listen to all the sides. And that's what struck me about this conference, was that there was representation from all sides of the kind of adoption sphere, shall we say. And I think that, you know, I've tried to do it in the past, you know, when I worked for Adoption UK. The first one we put on was, you know, we wanted young people's voices because we wanted them to be able to share their voices. And I think that was a really key part of kind of what I did for you know, that time. But actually, we wanted more. But that wasn't the kind of organization that we were, because obviously we were for adoptive parents, so you know,
yeah, it's a membership organization.
And Openness has that freedom to be able to do that, and I applaud Amanda and Fran and all those that got involved in it, because actually that's the sort of thing that we need to hear, and that's what struck me from those interviews. So,
thank you, that's very helpful. If you could no, I think that it was on reflecting back on it, and I think Sarah's point was very interesting, is that that there was a lot of conversations in the morning. There was lots of groups there represented and speaking a lot about how if support had been available, then things would have turned out differently. And Sarah was right, and she hinted at that. And it probably was a very quick comment, but she sort of indicated that that's not necessarily true.
Yeah.
That we can go back and look at 20 years ago and say, oh, well, if this had happened, then this, but we don't know. For some, that might be true, but not all. And I do think that I kind of liken it to being stretched in the opposite direction. I felt like I was stretched beyond where I was comfortable and beyond what I thought was right, in the opposite direction of with a much bigger emphasis on birth and first parents, beyond what I thought was, I'm not sure, but there's always that sense of, you know, like elastic, when you twang it too far and it comes back to a place that's right. And there was that sense of being stretched beyond where I thought was right, but then me adjusting to somewhere I was a bit more comfortable with, because, you know, it's subjective as well, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is.
But I think that actually one of the best things for me was the very end of the day when there was a panel of, I think it was 7 or 8 adopted people, and they all represented such different stories. And I didn't think that was, I don't think they'd sort of picked out the most extreme 7 or diverse 7. It just represented people with, adopted people with very different perspectives on adoption, very different experiences, and very different ideas of what should change and what the future should look like. And that therein lies the rub, that actually there is no one solution. There is no nirvana that's set out in front of us. But like you say, I commend Amanda, because I think that where else can we have these conversations? We try to have them. But actually, she did that. You know, it's a room full of 200 people, and you know, there was frictions, there was tensions, and it was probably one of the most draining conferences. That I've been to emotionally, but really, really enjoyed it. All of the people get back, and it was great to hear how to be adopted, because I think I've sort of messaged her every month to the point of stalking her, saying, "Oh, come on, Pod, come on, please, come on, please, come on." And she's kind of always said, "Yeah, I will do, but not right now." You know that the dog needs walking or something. And Sarah Fillmore, I thought, well, I've been looking for someone who could come on and talk about the law, and I think that she would. She's up for it. She was so much fun.
I think she would be rather entertaining as well.
Oh, she's so much fun. And if anyone who doesn't know who Sarah Fillmore is, she's a barrister, family barrister. And if you want to fill your evenings in, follow her Twitter account and watch her interactions with people, because she's just ferocious. I often sit and get sweaty just watching and thinking, I must never fall out with her. I must never say anything that upsets her.
Oh, dear. So I might be off sick the day that she's on.
we'll get like a mini you and me, send some stand-ins.
Oh, dear. I'm having flashbacks to Mr. Barrow. Anyway,
It won't go down like that. At all. I'll be meek and mild in a corner. Fingers on lips.
Fine. Yeah. Good.
Excellent.
Big change.
Well, every change is as good as a rest. Well, that was that one, and that's great. And I think I shall speak to you soon.
Au revoir.
Bon Jovi. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Don't you hang up.
Stupid boy.